It is 7:02. Thursday, March 14th, 1965. Let the record show that Representative Davis, Vice Chair, is present. Representative Herman, Representative Schultz, Representative Tito. Today we're, in deference to Mr. Thompson, we are taking up the HB 240. We've had this for us before. The only change that has been made in it is the word from lessor to lessee. And some new language at the very end of the bill. A person convicted under this section is guilty of an infraction. And in addition to other penalties, is provided by law, is subject to mandatory assessment of 60 merit points under your driver's license bill. This is a bill, as you all know, that we've had before us, having to do with passing school buses. Mr. Thompson, would you like to come forward?
Representative Thompson. Chairman, if I might, I would defer to Mr. Edwards from Legal Services first, if I could.
All right, Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Would you give your name and what you do for the record, please?
Right, George Edwards is my name. I work for the Legal Services Division of Legislative Affairs. I assisted in drafting on this particular bill, and if there are questions or whatever your pleasure is, Madam Chairman, I'm happy to discuss. One issue I might say that has come up in our conversations is the matter of prima facie evidence and just what that term means and the significance of it, and I'm prepared to discuss that if anyone's interested in that.
Is there anyone interested in the term prima facie evidence? If not, we won't bother discussing it.
Why don't you, I forgot what that means. Why don't you tell me, I think I know what it means. Why don't you, okay. You don't mind, Madam Chairman?
No, not at all.
Sure. In the way it's used, it's used not frequently, but it's a term that's used elsewhere in the state law. It's used in the criminal law as well as civil, but in the criminal law it has a particular meaning. It's defined in the rules of evidence, the Alaska rules of evidence, and in essence it means that if a person's automobile is identified in this case as having been at the wrong place at the wrong time, in other words going violating a school bus law, the fact that that automobile is owned by an individual is prima facie evidence that the individual who owned it was operating it at the time. And in a sense, that's like a presumption, but they don't use the term presumption because it's a little bit different. I think for ease of explanation, we can refer to it as a presumption that the person who owned the car is driving the car. But the presumption is a rebuttable one, and that means, in essence, if the person is able to satisfy either the prosecutor or the judge, if it has to go that far, that person wasn't driving the car, or comes up and says it wasn't me, it was must have been somebody else, or it was my brother-in-law, says that, then the presumption just goes out the window, and it just becomes a simple question of fact then. You just say, well, was he or wasn't he? Here's the evidence that he was, here's the evidence that he wasn't. Is it proved beyond a reasonable doubt? The state still has to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's a presumption that can go away very easily. It's a presumption that the courts in the state, in a jury trial, for instance, don't even need to give an instruction on. If the court just doesn't feel like it's appropriate, the court can disregard it. It's not the sort of a thing that can be used to really unfairly against the defendant in the sense of a presumption that says absolute mandatory presumption. If that's your car, you're guilty. It's not that kind of a presumption. It's a weaker presumption than that. It goes away quite easily. So it isn't a real draconian sort of a thing to use against the defendant.
All right. Are there any further questions, Mr. Kirk? Representative Murrow.
Would you be willing to put that into a statement and sign it?
Well, sure. I can give you an explanation if you want an analysis of what the evidence rule means. I've actually brought a copy of the evidence rule along here with me for each of you if you'd like me to distribute that to add to your file, if that would be helpful at all, Madam Chairman.
Yes.
I've got the little.
Christopher, could you pass that out, please? Representative Davis?
Madam Chairman, I think it's part of the public record now. I don't know if he has to take a statement and sign it. He's already stated it for the public record, but...
Yes, I...
I mean, that's pretty solid. He just said it for the public record.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure that...
I'm trying to paraphrase Evidence Rule 33, and that's certainly controlling in this case. So if I've not articulated it right, that's the law as it exists now on prima facie evidence.
I think you've articulated very nicely. Representative Davis?
I just have some general question on the legislation. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to be here until today, so I just the committee could endure with my questions. There is no state law against overpassing a school bus now. There is. I was looking for it in here, and I couldn't find it.
Well, it's in the regulation.
It's in the regulation.
It's done by regulation now. It's quite similar to this. We patterned this legislation after what public safety is already doing, so I don't think we're in conflict with them. Where this legislation is different and is really significant is it's patterned also in this subsection about prima facie evidence, subsection D. It's patterned after what some other states have done to make it easier to prove a case against someone who's violated this law. It's my understanding in the past that bus drivers, for instance, have become real frustrated with people that drive by them, and they notify the police and say, somebody endangered some kids, here's the license number, and the police have to say, well, can you identify the driver? And the bus driver, 9 times out of 10, says, hey, they were down below me, I didn't get that, but I sure got the license number. And the police say, well, unless you can prove it in court and identify this person, we can't prove that element of the case. So what this law does, it really is quite a dramatic change in that it says there is this rebuttable presumption that person was the driver. And that forces the person to come forward then and say, it wasn't me, it was somebody else, or else go to trial and try to convince the judge. But that's really the difference. There's also the difference, the penalty is still the same as I understand it. As the existing under the existing regs, so we really haven't changed much substance.
Representative Maru, let the record show that Representative Maru has joined us. Also, that Representative Furness, Representative Finalberry are excused for today.
On the top of, I have two questions. On the top of page 2, the first line, leasor is a new word to me, and all of the legal documents I've ever seen before, the words lessor and lessee were used. Therefore, it would seem that a lessee.
Representative Maru, we have the CS in front of us. You have the regular bill. If you look in your packet, I think you'll see the CS, which has changed that word to VC.
Madam Chairman, we have a motion to order to adopt committee substitute.
Yes, please.
So moved.
There's a motion in order to adopt committee substitute.
Madam Chairman, I had two questions.
Well, can we adopt committee substitute? Then get back to your question, sir. Is there any objection? No objection, so adopted. Would you continue, Representative Murray?
Sure. The other day, we were discussing adding perhaps a Section F, somewhat to the extent of stating, an affidavit by the owner or lessee of the vehicle described in D of this section shall be, in the absence of any evidence to the contrary, prima facie evidence that he or she was not the driver in question. Now, I've heard since then that that would not be required. On the other hand, to use an old saying, I can't see that it would hurt, wouldn't hurt, and it might remind somebody somewhere along the way that the driver of a vehicle could in fact sign an affidavit and said, look, on the day in question I was in Florida, I was not here. Would you see anything wrong with adding that?
Yeah, the problem in that is a practical one, and that is that if you put it into law, basically what you're giving is the person an absolute defense. Other states have done that, and what they say is if you sign the affidavit, that's sufficient then to defend against the case. It allows somebody who's dishonest to go ahead and just walk away from the case by a false signing of an affidavit. And all you are actually accomplishing there is sort of shifting the discretion of the prosecutor in the case from listening to this person and making the decision for themselves. In other words, as a practical matter, if a person comes in to the prosecutor's office and says, hey, that wasn't me, and the prosecutor says, well, who was it? And he says, it was my brother-in-law, or I was in Florida, and my wife can testify to that, the prosecutor isn't going to touch that case. He's not going to go to trial. He or she isn't going to go to trial in a case with that kind of weak evidence. So you get the case out anyway. But if you do it by form of affidavit, you just simply you put the ball into the defendant's ballpark, and the defendant can just walk in with this false affidavit and say, here, that's it. and you can't prosecute me anymore. And you know, you encourage lying. You benefit the liars, and you don't help the honest people particularly.
Well, how do we prevent the opposite, though? You seem to have a lot more faith in the legal system than I do, perhaps because you're part of it. But how do we prevent the opposite? How do we prevent some prosecutor from dragging this guy around through court and everything else when he, in fact, is quite innocent?
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got just what you say. You have to drag someone through the court. It isn't just the prosecutor's prerogative. The prosecutor has to make the decision and then defend that decision in court and satisfy a judge that the decision is a correct one. And in the first instance, this is not a particularly easy case to prove. In that if you don't have identification of the person and you come in and you base your case on prima facie evidence and you say there is this presumption because we can prove this is the car and this is the license number and this is the owner, that we've got a case against the person. But if the person comes into the judge and says, hey, judge, it wasn't me. I don't know who it was, but it wasn't me. The judge is then faced with balancing the evidence. And it's going to be real hard for the judge to find beyond a reasonable doubt, which is what he's got to do, beyond a reasonable doubt that it was, in fact, this person driving. It's not going to be an easy case to prosecute. In your egregious type of a case, this presumption is going to help. If the person doesn't give any defense or the person gets up and is a bald-faced liar, the judge is going to say, well, you know, the presumption is you were driving, sir, and I just don't believe what you tell me here, and it appears to me that the state has sufficient evidence given this presumption. And then that case is going to be provable. Otherwise, it's a difficult case to prove just in a balancing of evidence, and therefore a prosecutor is going to be deterred from bringing a case just for the wrong reasons. And if he or she's foolish enough to do it, when this defendant's got an alibi, the judge is going to throw it out right now. So I do have faith in the system, the way it's working now in the state. I don't think there needs to be a lot of pressure put on it, but I also think that the system is complex enough in this instance that you're not going to get something through that's a railroad job.
In the absence of an affidavit by the presumed defendant here, what would you recommend?
Through the chair, if you please, Mr. Marrow.
I beg your pardon?
Through the chair, if you please. Would you address the chair before you address the question?
May I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
Let's see here. Where were we? In the absence of this affidavit by the presumed defendant, what would you recommend to balance the system better than it is now? I would predict a lot of public outcry against this because we are presuming that these people are guilty just because they own a car that may not have even been the car in question. It could have been a slightly different color, a slightly different license plate number. What would you recommend in the absence of an affidavit from the presumed defendant?
Well, let me clarify one point, if I may, Madam Chairman. You're not going to get this case anywhere with the wrong license number or the wrong color. You're going to have to be very specific in identifying the car because those facts have to be proven before you're going to get into court at all. So the presumption comes from proven facts, and that fact has to show that that's the license number, that's the car, without question, owned by that person. So if there's an error in the first instance, you're never going to get to the point of being able to charge, to get a charge that'll stick. What was the rest of your question?
What would you recommend to balance it better? To balance the situation better here?
This is the sort of a law that's been created because of a problem, a specific problem that exists. If you start trying to balance it, you're going to gut the law is what it's going to amount to. It isn't going to be worth very much. It's got a lot of safeguards built into it. It's an infraction. It's not a misdemeanor. It's a relatively minor thing. The prima facie evidence is not a real strong presumption. It's a very weak one. It's about as mild a type of law of this variety as you're going to find. And if you're going to accomplish anything with it, it seems to me you're going to have to allow it to do its work. And if you use an affidavit, which is an alternative, which is the alternative used in other states, or the idea, another idea combined with that is that the owner can say, no, it wasn't me, it was somebody else, and actually point the finger at somebody else, in which case you got to go to the somebody else and leave the owner alone. Those are alternatives, but those both water down the law a lot. And as far as that second thing, that's another opportunity for a lying contest where the owner says, it wasn't me, it was this guy named Joe who I loaned the car to and I've never seen since. I mean, these are really the defenses you get. And a guy's going to come in and going to give you that defense and then say, look, this is all the law requires me to do. I've told you who it is. It's Joe. I've never seen him before or since. Now leave me alone. you know, and the prosecutor's hands are tied because you put something into this law that's locked he or she into it. And I think it's better to leave it this way and see if it works. You can always tighten it up if there are excesses, if there's problems. I don't think you're going to find that they are because of the nature of the prima facie evidence in Alaska.
Are there any further questions?
Madam Chairman,
Representative Davis.
Seeking his graces. I happen to know some bus drivers that have had problems with this in the past, and they turn the license plate into the police, and nothing's happened because probably for the same reason that you lined out. And it's a little facetious, but maybe if we can't charge the driver, we'll have to charge the car. You know. And, put the car off the street for a few weeks, and that would certainly get the attention. But this mm-hmm. seems like a more direct way of mm-hmm. dealing with the situation. But I guess the question that I wanted to ask was, do you know how many states or what kind of number of states that have this kind of law on the books now?
I've seen a number of them. I would suppose there's maybe 8 or 10 states that have a variety of this on the books. That's something like.
Madam Chairman, if you'd entertain a motion, I'd like to move that we pass this bill out with individual
recommendations. I'll entertain that motion. A motion has been made that we move the bill out with individual recommendations. Are there any objections? No objections, so ordered.
prosecute the car.
Sure.
Go for it.
Madam Chairman, may I be excused from the hearing now?
Yes, sir, please do.
We'll go back to sleep.
Thank you very much for your testimony, sir. We have before us HB 111, the LS RT bill, which I hope we pass out this morning. We've spent a great deal of time on this bill, and we need to adopt CS on this bill. Could I have a motion, please? Representative Davis has moved that we adopt the CS on HB 111. We have with us Mr. Carrillo to answer any questions. And Mr. Carrillo is our only witness. Mr. Carrillo, will you come forward, please?
I'm Charles Corrella, Department of Transportation.
You don't have it?
No.
Oh. Yes, are there any questions, Mr. Corrella? We've gone through the LS and RT bill several times, having to do with local roads and service and trails. Do we have any questions on the bill?
Madam Chairman.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Carrillo, my notes here show that the last time we were discussing this was when we had gone from the proposed five district to the proposed three region concept, and you were going to stick with the five district. Is that correct? What figures are we talking about now? Would it be that same five district? I don't see a date on the sheet, but
five district. Okay, we will be using the present concept of the five district, 50% population, 50% area, eliminating the first class cities.
Eliminating third class cities?
First class. This would be the act the way it says right now would reflect the next to the last column, or the five district concept.
Is that the one?
Yes.
Representative Murrow.
The elimination of first class cities, as I remember, was because they would be applying directly to the boroughs, whereas a home class would apply directly to the state?
Correct.
I mean, not home class.
If it's a direct allocation to the home rule, will remain the same. For instance, the city of Kenai, showing there under the Kenai Penn Borough, mm-hmm. would be getting their allocation direct from the state. Now the city of Soldotna, which was there in the first class city, they will be getting theirs from the borough. I used Kenai Penn Borough because it's the one that started the whole thing on first class city.
Do we have any further questions of Mr. Carrillo on the bill? Representative Maru?
I move we pass this bill with individual rights.
Representative Maru has moved that we pass the bill with individual recommendations. Are there any objections? No objections, so ordered. The next item to come before us is the appropriation bill for HB 411, or 111, excuse me. We need a motion to accept the appropriation bill in committee.
Which bill are we dealing with?
It's in your packet, and it has to do with $7 million.
It should be in your CS House Bill 111.
It's right underneath the CS, I think.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Representative Maru?
I thought that's what we were moving.
No, we were moving the actual bill.
What was it I just moved?
For the authorization.
I moved this one?
Yeah. And right beneath it, your packet was the...
Here.
So that, this is the...
One is the actual program, LSRNT, and now what we're she has before us is the appropriation bill, which will be sponsored by the House Transportation.
What's the
okay, Madam Chairman, do they have the same number? They don't have the same number, do they?
No. No, we have to move it separately and then send it up to the city clerk, or up to the city clerk, listen to me, up to the clerk and have it given a bill number and read across an appropriation bill. It merely puts LS 111 into an appropriating factor so that they can go ahead and dispense the money and due to the fact that this dropped out of the, remember we talked to the commissioner about dropping out of the budget?
Indeed. Do we have a number for that bill yet?
No.
Madam Chairman, is there a motion on the floor?
No, I need one.
Before I make a motion, did you want to say something, Representative Schultz? Don't we have to have a bill number before we can move the bill?
No, we do not. This is a committee-instituted appropriation bill, and that's why I need the approval of the committee to send it upstairs so we can get a bill number for it.
Oh, I thought you could just do that.
Oh, and bring it back?
And then bring it back.
I thought you could do that without even our saying yes or no.
I prefer to get the approval of the committee.
Well, you have my my approval, and I so move.
All right, move the appropriation bill to accompany the LSRT bill. Is there any objection? If not, so ordered. We want to make sure we didn't have any tangled ups.
That way, when it comes back before us, it won't generate a whole bunch of conversation and discussion.
I see.
Now we can read. Yeah. We have before us 160.
No. I got a good dose of it. I was in Washington.
And we don't have anybody from Anchorage?
Good thing we worked on a railroad bill, you know. Got me used to this chugging along.
Right. Let's see if I can get this. There's just some water down here. My mouth is dry. That's why we have a hard time talking. We have before us House Bill 160. This bill has to do with an act related relocation of utilities incident to highway projects and providing for an effective date. Our first witness on this is Sharon Macklin.
I'm not going to be testifying. We have somebody here that's representing the Alaska Telephone Association.
All right.
Gordon Parker.
Gordon Parker, right. Gordon, would you come forward, please?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Gordon Parker. I'm Executive Director of the Alaska Telephone Association, which is a trade association representing all the certificated telephone companies, local exchange companies in Alaska. Just briefly, Madam Chairman, our concern whenever it comes to rights of way is simply that we have a valid right of way. state statute provides that, and it's very necessary in our planning and our financial relations that we have it. As this bill, the committee substitute that I have here, as it's written now, I think it does protect us and is acceptable, except for one problem that I would ask the committee to consider, and that is some type of grandfathering clause. Prior to 1960, there was no permitting process to speak of. So if we have plant, and there is considerable dollars in plant around the state that was put in prior to that time, it's at risk without some kind of clause that protects it. I have nothing further to say, Madam Chairman. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to.
Do we have some questions of Mr. Parker? Representative Murrow.
Well, Madam Chairman, I believe we're discussing a CS here from CNRA.
Yes.
160?
Yes.
We had a clause once upon a time. It read as follows. It will be paid by the utility if the facility was installed after July 1st, 1960, and there is no utility permit for the facility. Does that sound reasonable? Does that sound...
I'm sorry, could you read that again?
Sure. It's number 3, line 22.
I think that would probably be good.
Representative Murrow, I didn't hear your question.
Okay, we had in the original bill, here, line 22 on the first page there.
Yes.
Item 3, read, by the utility if the facility was installed after July 1st, 1960, and there is no utility permit for the facility, which was the so-called grandfather clause.
Oh, and Madam Chairman, it...
Do you have a copy of that?
I do.
That was the original. And we are working on the CS.
Okay.
So, your question pertained to the original. Do you have a question on the CS? Evidently not. Representative Herman?
No, I'm sure not a question for a witness, but is something going to explain this, or can you explain what it says?
Rhonda, would you like to?
Attempt. We were hoping that we would have someone from DOT here this morning, because in researching this, it is quite confusing. And in looking at the original bill and the intent and the CNRA committee substitute, it seemed like we needed a middle bill in here because of the fact we don't have the grandfather clause. And when I started to put a grandfather clause in, it seemed like I started negating the sections that were in the CNRA bill. So I'm afraid that I was relying heavily on DOT this morning. But they're stuck in Anchorage.
Representative Murrow?
If I read the CS correctly, item 1, page, line 14, it would be paid by the department, so forth and so on, if it was installed before the effective date of this paragraph and the proper location in accordance with department regulations. So that would seem to me to take care of any grandfathering, because if it was installed, if I may continue here, I was in CNRA for this. This bill was in committee for some time, and we had a lot of discussion. And in the old days, I guess the way they did it was, you might be able to confirm this, was that when the utility went out there, the guy from the state said, put it right here. And so I put it right there. And there was no record of this. There was certainly no drawing of this. And so people don't know exactly where the lines are. and they have no record of where the lines are, but it was done according to, you know, the state directive. There was somebody there who said, yeah, put it right here. And there was a lot of discussion. That's why we ended up with, this is not the first change. This was about the third or fourth version that we came up with. But there was a lot of testimony on this matter. And there's a lot of discussion back and forth. And that, as if I remember correctly, that is what one of the reasons that we put that in there. If it was installed before the effective date and the proper location in accordance with department regulations, then the removal and relocation and so forth would be paid for by the department.
That's the way I interpret it. Do we have any further questions on the bill? Representative Davis?
Well, I don't know if it's a question of Gordon or not, but we are going to have someone from transportation come and talk to us.
Yes, there is no necessity to move this bill out today. We wanted you to get familiar with it, bring it up, and then Tuesday we'll... Hopefully the weather will be where they can get down.
Or teleconference.
Yeah, we could do it either way.
The employee's from Juneau that we needed.
Yeah,
he's just in Anchorage.
That's what it is.
Well, Madam Chairman, this I'm pretty sure a legislation very similar to this was introduced in the last legislature. Is that correct?
Very similar.
It passed the House?
Passed the House, did not pass.
Because I'd like to get some I'd like to have some historical perspective on this as far as what other state, what's the body of common law or case law as far as what's in effect in other states and what's the reason why this legislation is before us, things like that. I'm sure you might have some comments to that, but I know there's a lot of material that was generated in the last 2 years.
Yes, if you find your package, you'll find the CNRA testimony.
Yeah, I see that.
And if it's with the permission of the committee, we'll set aside HB 160 for the president and bring it up next Tuesday. Hopefully then to pass it out of committee. Does that give you enough time to contemplate?
Oh, you bet. Did you?
No, I
159 is also one that has to do with utilities. You have a great deal of backup in your packet. Let me remind the committee that these packets are available for Xeroxing at any time by their staff, so they're done the night before. They're always ready. So if anybody that wishes to study them prior to the scheduling of the bill, then they may do so. So let me urge you to have your staff come in, find out what's in your packet so that you are well informed. And we generally, it's very rarely that we don't have plenty of backup. And I recognize the fact you've been out of town.
Thank you.
And are about to leave again. That was just an aside for you, Mike.
Are you sending me off someplace?
No, I understand you're going to Fairbanks for the weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
How do I know more about your life than you do?
The committee's sending you.
Easy.
Then we'll leave these two bills until next Tuesday. Is there any further business come before the committee? Representative Murrow?
What about 160.
Well, that's the other one. That's the one we were just talking about.
Oh. Well, we were just discussing 159.
Same thing.
They both have to do with the same.
We're going to discuss them both on Tuesday.
Right. As I said, I would well, you have the experience having had it in CNRA. So if you have your experience with us next Tuesday and the rest of people read their packets, then we'll probably be able to pass them out rapidly.
I'm real pleased that we have a member of Community Regional Affairs to sort of usher us through this legislation. It's
two furnace.
Well, we have one here.
Right. That'll be very, very helpful. As you said, the historical perspective is helpful. Is there any further business come before the committee? If not, the committee is adjourned.
Is this an Ashley Reed bill or something?